It's River to River from Iowa Public Radio News. I'm Ben Kiefer. Mondays during our legislative session, we like to focus on bills and issues being debated in our state's capital. Joining me to do that on Mondays, as also on this Monday, Iowa Public Radio's legislative correspondent, State House correspondent, Joyce Russell. Hello, Joyce, live from the State House Law Library there. How are you doing today?
Hello, Ben.
We want to, even though Tax Day, sigh of relief is over for individual income taxes. That's what this hour is about, Joyce. We want to talk about various tax issues being discussed at the State House as well. We have a couple of lawmakers with you at the State House Law Library. Senator Joe Bolcom, a Democrat from Iowa City there. Also Representative Tom Sands, a Republican from Wapello. Good afternoon to you, gentlemen, and thanks for coming in today.
Good afternoon.
Hey, Ben.
And we want to focus this first half hour on, Joyce, a couple of industries, I guess you would say, that would be affected by some legislation. Now, honeybees is what we want to focus on first of all. We have Phil Ebert with us, an Iowa beekeeper, joining us by phone. Phil, are you there?
I am here.
Hi. I want to ask you in a moment about your beekeeping business. But first, Joyce, can you bring us up to date on what's going on as far as legislation concerning honeybee?
Oh, well, a bill has made it through through the House committee, or the entire House, just a House committee, that would create a new sales tax exemption for beekeepers. This is billed as a response to the honeybee hive problem.
Okay.
In order to encourage more beekeeping.
Okay, so that because this industry has hit some hard times for various reasons, also the colony disorder, the collapse, colony collapse disorder, that perhaps legislatively the honeybees can be given a boost. Is the rationale behind it more or less?
I believe so.
Okay, let's talk.
Our main man is right here. He can tell us. This is Representative Sands.
Phil Ebert. Okay, Phil, tell us, first of all, tell us a little bit about your beekeeping business.
Okay, we're running somewhere between 1,100 and 1,200 colonies of bees. I have two sons that are in this business with me, and we have an assortment of part-time help. I guess the core of our business is direct sales of honey to grocery stores.
Mm-hmm.
I've been at this since 1980. It's a scary way to make a living.
I bet you're depending on those little guys to bring in all that produce to sell.
We're dependent on those little guys, and we're dependent on Mother Nature, who can be extremely fickle.
Okay, so tell us what's been happening. We have the colony disorder, which we've reported on now for years. What are the biggest challenges you're facing as a beekeeper and have for the last few years?
Well, one is keeping them alive, and the other is finding some place where they can find adequate forage. It seems like we have to help them out more every year with protein supplement and feed and syrup. And we have what I would call the four horsemen of the apocalypse for bees. And the number one issue is varroa mites, which is a parasite that gets on the bees. And it's a parasite that is out of balance with its host. It just keeps multiplying until the bee's dead. They just get to the point they can't handle it anymore. There have always been viruses in these colonies. But now that we have these parasites moving from bee to bee, they facilitate the spread of those viruses. And over the last few years, we've found that the bees cannot tolerate the mite load that they used to just because these viruses have become so efficient at being transmitted. Lack of forage is another big issue. Bees are like people. They need food from a variety of sources, and the pollen is their protein, and the nectar is their carbohydrates, and they need an abundant supply of both. And then you throw insecticides into the mix, and it gets pretty tough if you're flying around out there as a bee.
Mm-hmm.
You're weakened by a parasite. Maybe you got the flu. You're a little malnourished, and then you get a shot of insecticide.
And then you have to make it through a winter.
Yeah, and that's tough going. And fall forage for us has been greatly diminished. 20 years ago, we seldom fed bees. You know, if they were light, it takes 60 or 70 pounds of food to get bees through the winter. Translated into corn syrup, that's 5 or 6 gallons. And last fall was absolutely horrible. We had bees starving to death at the beginning of September. And we poured protein supplement to them. We give them all 5 or 6 gallons of syrup, and I thought I was going to have a horrendous death loss. But Mother Nature was reasonably kind over the winter, and it's manageable. But you never know.
Mm-hmm.
It's tough going, and we don't migrate our bees. We winter them here in Iowa. So we have to be prepared for whatever comes through the winter.
Phil, how many years have you been in the beekeeping business?
We started, this is a hobby gone crazy. We started out in 1980 with two colonies of bees, and it was a hobby. And it became a vehicle for my kids to make a living, or not make a living, but make money. And then my son Adam, when he was in high school, really got into this, and we got serious in the mid-90s. And it's just gone from there.
Mm-hmm. You've been able to observe then 35 years of bees in Iowa. Can you take a step back and look at those 3.5 decades and say, well, where was your peak production? When were Iowa bees in their healthiest condition?
Varroa mites arrived in the late 80s here. They didn't hit us until 93. We have had some good crop years since. 2005 was a good year, and 2012 wasn't bad.
Mm-hmm.
But out of the last 5 years, four of them have been pretty slim.
Mm-hmm. Okay, so let's get to this legislation. Obviously, you're in the honeybee business. An exemption from tax would be good, but fill in exactly why and how that would help our bee population and bee production in Iowa.
Well, if you have a bad winter loss, you know, the expense of regenerating these colonies is extreme. And the tax on these package bees, it's a pittance. If there's 10,000 packages sold in Iowa, and there's not that many sold, but that's a ballpark figure. And if they brought in $100 a piece, that's $1 million. We have local option tax here in Jasper County. So if you figure 70% or 7% of $1 million is $70,000, there's more money than that been spent on hush money to these state employees that have been terminated. And it's just, other livestock is not taxed. You know, we don't tax a cow given milk. And so this isn't a lot of money, but it could be. You know, for a small-time operator, smaller amounts are big amounts. And it would just overall help with being able to regenerate these colonies that go south in the wintertime.
Mm-hmm. Joyce, you're there with our lawmakers at the State House Law Library. I wonder if we could get their view.
Yeah, Representative Sands, how did this went through your committee, this sales tax break, but I haven't seen any action on it since. Is it not going to go any further? And how did it first come to your attention?
It's still live for debate, Joyce. There's a lot of the tax credits and exemptions that are being held right now, trying to figure out which ones have the potential going forward. The way this come about is one of my members in the House Republican Caucus, but he's not on Ways and Means, came up to me and said, do you know that the state of Iowa still charges sales tax on honeybees on the sale of those or the purchase of them, and we don't do that for any of our other livestock producers or farm groups? And I said that we're always looking at ways to make Iowa's tax code more fair and equitable and balanced, and we shouldn't be charging one group a sales tax price on their purchase if we're not on everyone else. And so we looked at that and came forward with this bill. And the producer, you know, really kind of hit the nail on the head, I believe, when he said that it's not a big fiscal impact to the state of Iowa, obviously, but it is a fiscal impact on local producers. And if this is, number one, it's fair. Number one, it puts us in line with our other ag products. And number three, if this can help them to actually have more honeybees in the state of Iowa, I think we all win, both as a farm group and as a nature as well. So that's
Senator Bolcom, you usually have your antenna up for excessive tax credits or or tax breaks. How do you feel about the honeybee sales tax exemption?
I'm learning a lot about it today. This bill did not get introduced in the Senate, but I'm happy to take a look at it. One of the jobs that Representative Sands and I have, and we worked very closely together for a number of years on these tax issues, is to make sure that Iowa has a fair, competitive, easy to administer tax system. But one of the jobs of the Ways and Means Committee is also to make sure that we have sufficient revenues to meet the priorities of the state for education, public safety, environmental concerns, health care, and the like. So we're looking at a list of probably 36 different tax policies that people have brought. That in hearing Phil's story, you know, for listeners, you know, it's like, why can't we fix this? The other 36 requests we have before us also have compelling stories in many cases around them. So it's a challenge in that way when you think about making sure the state has enough revenue. And it's been an issue this session. When we got back here in January, it was the cupboards are nearly bare for resources, and we're not going to have enough resources to fund our local schools. So, and I don't know what the fiscal note is on this. Whenever there's a tax bill that comes forward, we try to estimate how much revenue we will forego or essentially give up in the enterprise. And so it's important to know that as you move different ideas forward.
So to some degree, this will be a joint decision between the two of you on which of these tax bills you'll move forward?
Well, Representative Sands and I oversee these two committees. I'm in the Senate and Tom's in the House. And in the appropriation process, the leaders of the General Assembly decide what we call targets, and we get a target, and the target essentially is how much money will we be spending this year on things like education, healthcare, public safety, et cetera. In the area of the Ways and Means Committee, we haven't been given a budget target or an amount of money that we'd be able to apply to these kinds of tax cuts. We have been in conversation over the last few weeks about different things we share interest in, but at this point, we haven't been told by our leaders, you have $8 million to spend on tax credits, for example.
Mm-hmm. I think a lot of that is obviously correct, that Senator Bochum and I, we act kind of like the funnels on committee on deciding which ones have the ability to get to the floor action, but we both understand the process around here and knowing that we can always get trumped by Majority Leader and Speaker.
Mm-hmm. Let's go back to the beekeeper, Phil Ebert, if he's still there on the phone. Compare, if you could, in your mind, you know, the next few years with a tax break compared to without a tax break. Is there any way to make that prediction as a beekeeper?
Oh, gee.
I mean, the money for you said you have about 1,000 colonies. A tax break would result in X number of dollars, and would that be plowed back into producing or making up for the loss that you have by buying packages of bees?
Oh, yeah, absolutely. We pour tons of money into this every spring. And I tell you what, it adds up in a hurry. It'd all get kicked back into the business.
Mm-hmm. But for someone who's not in the beekeeping business, give us a sense of what this tax exemption would mean. Is it just a few more bees? As Senator Bochum said, we have at the legislature a lot of priorities. It's a matter of ordering these priorities, I guess, huh, Phil?
Yeah, it certainly is. All I can say is it would give me more money to invest back into my business. And I've had one son working here full-time for, I think, since 2005. And then my other son, who works here part-time, he's a college professor. But he's given that up to come into the business full-time. So we're looking at, you know, additional revenue streams and other ways, because we've got to ramp this up so he can make a decent living at this.
Okay. Phil Ebert, Iowa beekeeper, thank you for giving us your perspective on this. We hope your bees do better in the future. All right. We're here still with Joyce Russell and our lawmakers, Joe Bochum and Tom Sands. Let's turn to another, I guess this is another bill that would provide a tax exemption, Joyce, for a coin-operated laundries?
I believe it's a sales tax exemption, yes, for coin-operated laundries.
Daryl Johnson joins us by phone, the owner of Giant Wash Laundry and president of the Iowa Self-Service Laundry Association. Hello, Daryl.
Hello.
Hi, give us your story. First of all, your business. You have a coin laundry business. How many locations?
Well, we are six stores, five of which are in Minnesota. I do live in North Iowa, but we do have a store in Iowa. We've, as of a few years ago, we had nine stores and have subsequently sold some of the Iowa stores and moved towards Minnesota. Mm-hmm. But yeah, we do have six stores with one in Iowa, and it's been a nice business.
Okay. Daryl, make the case for a tax exemption for coin-operated laundries. Everybody would like a tax exemption. Why should it be you or your business?
Well, there's a couple of reasons. One is Iowa is one of four states in the nation that actually charges sales tax on coin laundries. It's Iowa, West Virginia, New Mexico, and Hawaii. And so that's part of it. It puts us at a competitive disadvantage to the bordering states, which is why I've invested the money that I have in Minnesota, is because it's just simply more profitable, unfortunately. I'm an Iowa boy. I want to do business in Iowa, but this tax is forcing me out.
So you're saying that you have opened laundromats or coin-operated laundries in Minnesota where you, if not for this tax, you would have opened them in Iowa?
That's exactly what I'm saying.
Have you sold businesses because they were in Iowa and preferred to invest in Minnesota?
Yes, I have.
Wow. How many?
I've sold two and closed one.
Hmm. Purely because of this tax issue?
Yes. Yes. We can get into the numbers and it can get quite complicated, but essentially this comes down to it's a tax on the low income. Laundromats are primarily used by those that are the most economically impoverished. They're going to be tenants. It's going to be kids right out of college. It's going to be kids in college. It's going to be primarily, minimum wage or just barely above minimum wage workers that typically will use laundromats. And they're also young families, typically. So it's a tax that anybody that owns their own home and has a washing machine in their basement, middle income, they don't pay this tax. But those that come in and use our facilities and use our equipment are required to pay a tax that nobody else has to.
So, Daryl, this is Joyce Russell. Just to clarify, if I go to a laundromat and I put so many quarters in the machine, I don't see any sales tax happening there. But at the end of the year or end of the month or whatever, you make an estimate of that and levy the sales tax and submit it to the state. Is that how that works?
Yes, that's exactly the other point I was going to make, Joyce, is that it's uncollectible. It's a tax. It becomes a gross receipts tax because, like you say, washing machines are designed to be run on quarters. And so as a result, we either overtax or undertax our customers because we have to round it to quarters. And so at the end of the month, we calculate up all the revenue we did. In Mitchell County, we have the local option, so we back 7% off, and we pay that into the state.
Hmm. Okay, can we bounce this off our lawmakers, Senator Bolcom and Representative Sands here? Another plea for a tax exemption? I guess let's find out how you react.
Yes, this is another one that I look as an equitable situation that is the reason we came forward with the bill again this year to remove that sales tax on the self-pay laundries. This bill has been around at least for 3 years and has gotten some little discussion and more awareness. If this bill passes, the laundromat owner would still be required, I believe, to pay a sales or use tax on the purchase of the machines. But when they provide the service, the customer or the person walking in to do their laundry would no longer be paying that sales tax to just just to use the machine. And it's much different than going to a dry cleaner where you're actually paying for a service. On a self-paid laundry, it is the person that walks in that does everything. They're just wanting to use the laundromat. And I believe Daryl made another good point, is it does tend to be more lower income people that use laundromats, and I think it's an equitable thing to do.
And Senator Bolken, what's your take on this one?
Yeah, I share Representative Sand's view on this. I think the fiscal note's what, $1 million, something more than
or
that?
Or a little less.
A little less. About $1 million. So again, we talked to Phil, and he doing the beekeeping sales tax has a cost. This has a cost. I think in touring some of the stores in my district, I've become more convinced that we ought to take a look at this. When we compare, this is a small business issue. It certainly would help lower income folks or people that use laundromats. On the other side of the ledger, we have lots of very wealthy companies. We have a data center tax credit that gave Google and Facebook and Microsoft tens of millions of dollars for mature businesses that are profitable. And then we have another credit around research that gives refund checks to very profitable Fortune 500 companies like Deere & Company and DuPont, Pioneer, Rockwell, et cetera. But these little guys come forward, and they don't have lobbyists here at the State House for the most part. And we have real scrutiny over $100,000 or this tax, the sales tax on coin washer and dryers, maybe $1 million or $800,000, where we have real trouble getting support for that kind of thing. And while at the same time, a lot of these other credits kind of go out the door with very little scrutiny.
Mm-hmm. And when Daryl Johnson, Senator Bolken, when Daryl Johnson says he, if not for this tax, he would have had more openings, more coin operated laundries here in Iowa. That perks up a lawmaker's ears.
Well, I mean, Daryl needs customers, and if he could be profitable with opening locations in Iowa, it's 5% sales tax. I hope his margin's better than that. At the end of the day, if he doesn't have customers that want to wash their right. clothes in his machines, he probably shouldn't open stores. But I'm sure there's plenty of dirty clothes being created every day in Iowa somewhere that if it makes sense as a business to locate a facility, people will do it.
Daryl Johnson, in part to answer to get on the radar of lawmakers, is it true you are now president of the Iowa Self-Service Laundry Association? You formed that not too long ago precisely for this reason?
Yes. That's exactly true. About 6 years ago now, we partnered with the National Coin Laundry Association and formed an affiliate in Iowa, simply because we were frustrated that we were having to pay a sales tax and all of our neighboring states did not have to.
Okay, we have to take a short break. Daryl Johnson, thank you very much for giving us mm-hmm. your perspective on a tax exemption bill at the Iowa legislature. On Mondays, we like to look at what's going on at the legislature. That's what we're doing with Iowa Public Radio's Joyce Russell and also two of our lawmakers. We'll be back in just a few minutes. It's River to River from Iowa Public Radio News. And we're back with more of River to River from Iowa Public Radio News. I'm Ben Kiefer. It's been nearly 6 years since Mark Becker shot and killed Applington Parkersburg High School football coach Ed Thomas. Tomorrow on this program, I'll talk with Mark Becker's mother, Joan Becker, about her new book titled Sentenced to Life, the Mark Becker story. Also on tomorrow's program, having to do with mental health, we'll hear from organizers of what is called This Is My Brave, a night of storytelling about living with, finding help, and caring for loved ones with serious mental illness. That's tomorrow over the noon hour here on River to River. Today, during the legislative session on Mondays, we like to focus on issues and bills being debated at our state capitol, and we are doing so. Ben Kiefer here with Joyce Russell, Iowa Public Radio's State House correspondent. We're talking about various tax issues. still alive during this session here, and two lawmakers with us, Tom Sands, Representative Sands, a Republican from Wapello, and the Democrat from Iowa City, Senator Joe Bolcom, in the State House Law Library with Joyce Russell. We'll talk about a number of tax issues here to round off the hour, but first, baseball fields. Let's talk about that. Field of Dreams, it was a movie site near Dyersville that turned into a tourist landmark, and the legislature was in on that. Joyce Russell, let's talk a little bit about Field of Dreams and how tax breaks were given to this field.
Yeah, it was in order to turn it into a regional sports complex. The legislature agreed to a tax rebate. Now that's where it doesn't cost the state treasury, because if that complex weren't there, they wouldn't be generating any sales tax. So mm-hmm. they get a rebate for a certain amount of time as an incentive to get it going. And at the time that was approved, sales tax rebate was approved, there were arguments that it should be extended to other sports complexes. There was some resistance to that. I remember the argument being, well, where does this end? But now there's a bill that would do that would expand this sales tax rebate to other sports complexes. And I should say that a similar kind of tax deal was granted to the Iowa Speedway in Newton as a mm-hmm. way to help them get off the ground.
Okay, so this is still alive in the legislature to broaden this sales tax rebate. Let's go to our lawmakers again for their thoughts.
Representative Sands, I think this is in your committee, or so you want to start?
I can. The earlier on in session, group came and or a member come and asked if we would think about expanding this law, because is the Field of Dreams sales tax exemption. So Joyce was exactly right. If it never comes, never materializes, then the state isn't out any money, because we allow them to keep some of their sales tax dollars. And of course, you have to build and expand to do that. I mean, it's specific for that area. When someone else question whether we should open this up a little bit and rewrite the law that it would be more beneficial for different groups around the state, I agreed to write some legislation and take a look at it. But as we're looking at it, in the past, the reason we've done this is for special, larger projects that, while it might be in one area, that the whole state of Iowa can benefit. And if this gets broken down, I think we lose somewhat that concept. So we have not debated it in the full committee yet, and I'm not sure that we will yet this year.
Mm-hmm. Do you also have doubts about it, Senator Bolcom?
I do. I mean, as I said earlier in the show, one of our jobs on the Ways and Means Committee is to make sure we have sufficient state revenues to fund the priorities of people of Iowa. And these kinds of tax credits that give up sales tax that would be paid for the state erode the state's revenue stream. And so I've been reluctant to do that. There's been a number of credits where people want to hold on to sales tax that are paid at the local level to reinvest in the specific projects or in local economic development efforts. So we passed a bill a couple of years ago establishing reinvestment districts, which allowed, I believe it was $100 million worth of future sales tax revenue to be diverted to these projects. And it started with the Newton track, and once you create something, people say, well, we did it there, can't we do it here? And that's kind of the conversation we're having this year around this proposal.
Mm-hmm. So the prognosis for this proposal probably for this session, Senator Bolcom?
I think it's got a ways to go yet.
Okay.
In terms of getting approval. Mm-hmm.
Let's talk a little bit about some other tax issues. It was 2 years ago that both major parties in the Iowa legislature enacted the largest tax cut in history. Joyce, can you remind us about that tax cut? Because we're dealing with the ripples of that, I guess, in this legislative session, aren't we?
Well, it was a very large property tax cut to be phased in over a number of years in order to, the proponents said, make Iowa's property tax system more competitive. That bill also had an income tax component. It increased earned income tax credit for low-income families. I don't remember the dollar amount on this. I imagine when we move to our guests, they will, but it was a very large tax cut.
Mm-hmm. Senator Bolcom, in what ways are those tax cuts from previous session, the reduction of commercial property tax rates and providing some income tax relief, impacting the work this session in the 86th Iowa General Assembly?
Well, I don't think there's any doubt that it's having an impact. Previous decisions about foregoing state revenue to do the earned income tax credit or the property tax, commercial industrial property tax proposals. As people remember, the property tax proposal was a compromise. Senate Democrats had a proposal that focused on small businesses. The governor's plan focused on really more large companies, many out of state. And when we brought those two ideas together, it was a very big bill, about nearly $280 million worth of revenue that or taxes that Iowans pay in the form of income and sales tax. It's now being transferred to business owners and to local governments to make up for the loss. And I'd have to say at this point, if we were to make some changes, I think it was probably too generous, and it went into effect too quickly, and we're having to absorb it. The first $133 million we'll spend this year is on the second step of this plan that we put in place to cut commercial industrial taxes, and it is competing against K-12 and other priorities that people have to invest in the priorities of people of Iowa. But it is the law, and we're trying to accommodate as best we can.
Mm-hmm. Representative Sands, too generous was the characterization from Senator Bolcom there. Are you on board with that, or would you look for future cuts that would be as big or bigger?
I would give you a completely different scenario in the property tax bill. On number one, I don't think it was too generous, nor did it go into effect too soon. In fact, I believe it was about 40 years since the last major property tax change had been made, so it was a long time in coming. And I don't believe that just looking at the reduction in sales or the reduction in state revenue is a holistic picture. You also have to look at what happens to that money when it goes back into the taxpayers' hands. And when you look at some of the business tax credits that helped many of the small businesses and the medium-sized businesses, they were able to take that revenue and plow it right back into their business and the economy. So it isn't a complete minus. There's some plus dollars coming back on the other side that it's hard to account for, but you know that they're putting it into the economy. The other thing is you have to remember that over the last 20 years, property taxes have been growing about twice the rate of inflation, and this certainly helped ease some of that pain. So I think it was a step in the right direction, and would look at other ways in getting tax dollars into the people that earn the money, and that be the taxpayers.
And Representative Sands, just one quick follow-up on that. I know that that Governor Branstad, when he promoted this property tax cut, he all along intended to use surplus revenues to pay for it, and House Republicans are insisting not using surplus revenues to pay for it. How do you really justify that? Because then you really get to hitting schools and all of the other demands on state government if you take that tax cut out of the general revenues.
The way I understand it right now is, yes, the governor is claiming that he intended all along to use the ending balance or the surplus revenues from the previous year to fund that reimbursement back to local governments. That wasn't in the bill anyway that I remember, nor do I remember having that discussion before. But it's also money going back into the taxpayers' hands that is providing more revenue for the state in a different avenue. So I don't view it just as a loss of revenue.
Well, one of the challenges of this entire General Assembly is, what are we going to do to support K-12 schools? And we're in like the second week of overtime because we haven't been able to come up with a number that won't result in layoffs in virtually every school district in the state. One of the major reasons is past decisions around tax cuts, including the commercial and industrial tax cut. And there has been, we've asked our legislative service people for what is the fiscal upside of this tax cut and in terms of job creation and the like, and they don't really have any numbers because many of the tax cuts in this plan that we passed actually found their ways to places like Minneapolis, where Target has their headquarters, and Bentonville, Arkansas, where Walmart has their headquarters, and a lot of other places where if you think of the kind of the big box stores in places like Menards and Home Depot, those dollars essentially left Iowa. So those dollars aren't here in the economy. We have actually pretty good state growth. We had about $400 million in new revenue this year, which is 6%, which is really good. The economy's moving along, and we're in this place with the state budget of austerity. And these tax cuts, we also gave the Economic Development Authority another $50 million in tax credit authority about 3 years ago. That's also part of this spending that has made it really hard to make a budget for education this year.
And Representative Sands, very briefly, you seem to be saying that while the governor promoted this property tax cut with having in mind using the surplus, all along House Republicans didn't see it that way, and you fully expected that that was going to be in competition with school funding and everything else.
That it would come right out of the general fund as a limited standing appropriation, correct?
Mm-hmm. Okay, we're going to move on to another issue that Senator Bolcom, you've, I believe, introduced a bill that has to do with the tax breaks that the state has implemented for data centers. There's been a lot of publicity of this, very exciting new advance, Google, Facebook, Microsoft, major investments in the state and tax breaks in order to help attract that. Tell us about a bill that you have introduced that would limit that.
Well, we're obviously really happy to have Google, Facebook, and Microsoft find Iowa to be a good home to do data centers. And one of the reasons, there's a few really good reasons for that. One is we have low-cost electricity, which is a primary input to a data center. We have an abundance of renewable energy. These companies are under pressure to use renewable energy to power them, and we have a great wind industry. We've got plentiful water. They use a lot of water to cool these data centers. And amazingly, we live in a northern climate, and if it's cold for a few months, it lowers the cost to cool some of this equipment. So we had some incentives that were natural incentives for these companies to come to Iowa. On the tax credit side, a number of years ago, we put in place a very lucrative tax environment, which has the state paying for all the sales tax and investment tax credits on the construction of the buildings, on all the equipment inside the buildings. And we also forgive sales tax on all the electricity used in the buildings. I'm not even sure that our Department of Revenue and our Legislative Service Agency can calculate how much tax benefit these companies receive. And so there's been a bill introduced for newcomers to the state to essentially pay sales tax on the electricity they use. Is the major component of that bill. But it's looking prospectively going forward. And I think there's reason to really take a look at this credit to see whether we need it, the other treatments that mm-hmm. we do around this.
How do you rank this as a tax incentive compared to others? I mean, I think probably the mother of tax incentives is the fertilizer plant down in Southeast Iowa, which was described as a record tax incentives. How would you rank these data center tax incentives, Senator Bolcom? Would it even come close to that?
Yeah, I think it would in some probably dwarf that. I mean, the fertilizer tax credit probably is about $80 million all totaled. I think this is far exceeds that to these three companies. They also get property tax abatement in all the communities for, you know, 10, 20 years. So these companies are hardly paying any taxes on anything, and it's not even clear to me, and I've asked, I haven't got an answer, what do they pay taxes on in terms of taxable, what running a data center in Iowa, how is it taxed?
Representative Sands, I assume you would have a different take on this?
Well, I think there's always that question on when it's a state or local government providing incentives is what is the correct level of incentives and how should you administer that? In other words, should it be a cash award? That gets very difficult. Or should it be a forego on maybe property taxes or sales taxes if they come? That becomes a little more palatable because obviously to get that reward, they have to come and build, okay? And one of the best things that a successful company supplies is workers. Jobs in that help grow communities and the state. So you got to step back and look at the whole picture to see what is the reward, what are they providing for the community, what are they providing for the state, and then what is that initial cost, and it is something short-lived that can be that we all can benefit from in the future.
Senator Volcom, it was late in the session for this to get introduced. I know you expressed some a concern about this and expressed some intentions to file something on this last summer. What are the prospects for this? Probably not very good.
Well, one of the things I've learned, Joyce, over the years I've been on this committee is once you create a credit, it's virtually impossible to get rid of it. Whether you can show that and whether people even agree it's working as an incentive to incent some sort of economic behavior, and this would fall into that category. I've been visited by Google, Facebook, and Microsoft. They don't like the bill. So it's got a future that is quite bleak at this point.
In the last few minutes we have in our discussion here, let's talk about the casino tax. There's a House file 636, also a proposal there. I believe, Representative Sands, you can introduce us to this. This is something that would eliminate the promotional tax, which our casinos have to pay?
Correct. We introduced this bill, I believe, last year and worked quite a while to get it perfected. This year, it has come out of committee. And essentially, the promotional play is our coupons. And they are casinos not only have to pay income tax on or their gaming tax on their total or their net receipts, but they also would be paying a double taxation when they pay the coupon as well. And as new casinos are coming online and with technology, the use of these coupons seem to be growing, and it seems to be, there again, fair and equitable that we don't charge anybody double taxation, that the taxation off the coupons should be removed.
Mm-hmm. Is this a bill that you've sponsored or written?
It's one, as the chairman of the committee, I've sponsored and wrote it as a Ways and Means House study bill, but it's not an individually sponsored bill by myself. However, it is an issue that I wholeheartedly support.
Mm-hmm. This bill sort of has generated the usual suspects. The anti-gambling people don't like it. And then, of course, the casinos are way, way behind it. And I'm wondering how this, I know in the past there have been court challenges that the casinos have brought claiming unfair taxation compared to other industries or other casinos. Do you think that this one would survive a court challenge? Is that one option if they don't get this, that they could take it to court?
Well, I don't have a law degree. I learned a long time ago. I'm not even going to try to give an opinion on what may or may not happen in a court case. But it is an industry that is the only one that I'm aware of that we charge an income tax on their coupons. So I believe it is unfair the way it is and inequitable. But a gaming debate is a completely different debate up here and cuts supporters or people are against it for a variety of reasons, and this one is no different.
Mm-hmm. And Senator Volcom, I've heard a few people express concern about, the gambling revenue, tax revenues go into a certain fund, and then there are various projects that's, it doesn't go into the general fund, it goes into a fund with various projects, one of them being the REAP program, for example. Would you have concerns about this, Senator Volcom, just because of what kind of hit it could make on that fund?
Yeah, I think I've talked to members of the committee that oversee that budget, and we spend that money on clean water programs, a lot of infrastructure programs of the state, public buildings at our public universities. And I think it's in the neighborhood of what, $20 million? So it would be a significant potential loss of revenue, and we continue to study it in the Senate.
All three of you are intimately involved, of course, with the legislature and know what's going on this session. Can you, in closing, give us an idea of when this session will come to a close? How soon, Senator Bolcom?
Well, we're waiting for some agreement on the K-12 funding decision. Once that's decided and how much is going to be put aside to take care of our K-12 schools, we'll have a better idea of what the overall spending picture is going to be. And once the leaders and the governor decide that, I think members are dying to get to work and putting together the various bills across all the different budgets so we can conclude our work here. I suspect that we're going to be here for the better part of May at this point.
Mm-hmm. You see it the same way? Quickly, Tom Sands, Representative Sands.
Unfortunately, I have reserved the place I stay for the full month of May.
Okay. Not ending tomorrow or anytime soon, but in the month of May is the prediction from our folks today. Representative Tom Sands from Wapello and Senator Joe Bolcom from Iowa City, Coralville, thank you for joining us.
Thanks.
And Joyce Russell, it's a pleasure being with you on Mondays for our legislative session. River to River is produced by Emily Woodbury, Lindsay Moon, and Claire Roth. Julia Davis, thank you. I'm Ben Kiefer. Thanks for joining us.